Welcome to First Things First. It is a Monday morning. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. The bosses are in town. We got to be on good behavior today, but that'll be easy since we are talking football.
We'll see.
And more football. Lots to get to. A brutal loss for the Steelers last night. A big bounce back win for the Patriots. And a cowboy will beat a lion on any given Sunday. That's where we will kick off our show this morning. Cowboys and Lions and Ezekiel Elliott, the story in this one. He was unleashed, as we all thought he needed to be. Carried the ball 25 times, gained 240 total yards, and scored a touchdown. Most importantly, that 34-yard catch you just saw to set up that. The game-winning field goal. 26-24 was your final in this one. Dak Prescott threw for 255 yards and two touchdowns as the Dallas Cowboys now improve to 2-2. Here is Ezekiel Elliott discussing that pivotal catch after the game.
Honestly, I've been trying to get that play for a while. We ran it a couple of times in practice and it hit, but once I saw we got in a two-minute offense and they were playing man-to-man, they had a linebacker lined up on me in the slot, I just knew, I was telling the guys on sideline, give me the inside fade.
And you got Zeke on a linebacker. We're going to take that matchup any day of the week. Doesn't matter who the linebacker is.
Now that catch over his shoulder, when it all counted, should be one we all remember. And I'm glad I got to see it. But I've never seen him play any better than he played today.
2-2 is much better than 1-3, and it's it was great for us just to come out here, get things going offensively, and just be able to go down there and win that game on that last drive. It's big for everybody's confidence and just moving forward and momentum that we can take from this game and carry on.
Guys, we talked about it all week. The only way the Cowboys were going to win was if Ezekiel Elliott carried the ball more than 15 times. The game yesterday, 25 times. You saw it proved to be correct. See, was Zeke dominating the offense the formula for the Cowboys' success, in your opinion, yesterday?
Any offensive coach is trying to get the ball in his best player's hands as much as possible. When you are challenged as far as wide receivers, tight ends, explosive players, what else would you do? I don't know why it took them 4 weeks to get to this. This is the way they should play. What we talked about last week was Dallas's lack of an identity, and they needed every one of those yards, every one of those catches from Zeke. And this is the way they're going to have to win. If he gets worn out as the season goes on, that's okay, because if they don't, they're just going to be a 500 team. If they're going to make it to the playoffs, it's because their best player gets the most touches on that offense. That's the way they should start off every game. They should force defenses to be able to take Zeke out of the game. Make them, as they put a linebacker on, I don't think you can grow his receiving like you did as much. Don't look for them to be able to throw down the field 38 yards every game. No, but in this game, put him in the slot, you get one-on-one, you take advantage of it. But you can see even Zeke was a little surprised. He said they ran this a couple times in practice. So for me, this wasn't necessarily a game plan thing. It was something that the coverage dictated and Dak took advantage of it with them having man-to-man across the board.
Special players make special plays, and Zeke should have been surprised. In his NFL career, that's the first time he's ever been targeted more than 10 yards downfield. So whatever passes they've thrown to him, none of them have ever been more than 10 yards downfield until this play, and, man, he made it count. I mean, this was, this and the field goal, the biggest plays of the game. Maher has to go make that field goal, but this is exactly what we talked about. Jenna, you're right, because it wasn't just that hammering Zeke was effective. All of a sudden, they can take a few deep shots offensively outside of that play. They went into this football game with one pass play on the year greater than 20 yards. Yesterday, they had four greater than 30 yards. Like, it wasn't, there was a screen to Zeke, there was that play to Zeke, but Jeff Swaim had one, Michael Gallup had one, and if Dak's going to be effective, it's not going to be the 72% Drew Brees completions. It's going to have to be with some shots downfield. This is exactly what Dallas has to do. Now, a critic would say, you had Zeke's career best game, and it took a field goal at the gun
to win it.
To win, I get that. But they had to win. Philly couldn't win. Their division is all of a sudden they look at it, they say, okay, we're a game behind Washington or a half game behind Washington in our division. We'll deal with that. Zeke was outstanding, and if you're Dallas, you do have to have a little regret because you didn't give Zeke a chance to be this outstanding through 3 weeks. I also wonder why it took so long, but better late than never, I suppose.
Did you look at this Dallas team yesterday and say, well, they were much better than I've seen the last couple weeks? Or did Zeke just finally do the thing that he needed to do to help them win?
They did a couple more things. They weren't a lot better. I mean, if they don't complete this, if they don't have that drive, they lose. So I'm not going to change the whole narrative because they came up with the key drive. If you look at yesterday's action, it's about coming up with the key drive. A lot of these games are going to be very, very close. Do I expect Dallas to give up 23, 24 points every game? I expect their defense to be better. Now, they're not turning the ball over, and Dak, even when he had free runners in the backfield, making good decisions, but they have to build on this. They have to have Zeke involved in the passing game, and they have to have a concentrated effort to be able to get the ball down the field the way they did in this game. Because even with the two plays over 30 yards before Zeke makes his play, they would have lost this game.
Yes.
So you would have been like, oh, they made twice as many as they have been making, but they still lost the game. I don't like the fact with 180 yards rushing that this was still a close game. You would think 2016, if Dallas had 180 yards rushing, they're going to blow you out, beat you by at least 17, 20 points. No, this team is not as talented. So even when they dominate with the running game, which they have to week after week, this was still a game that could have been won by either team at the end.
And this is, we talk about this all the time between college and pro. Almost all these games are going to come down to a drive. And the Cowboys made the plays. There's a reason that a 7-point line in an NFL game is considered a huge line. Like, these games are supposed to be 3- and 4-point games. But if you just looked at the box score and you say, all right, so Dallas had 10 first downs rushing the football. Forget any first downs passing. They only committed 2 penalties. Dak took care of the football. Wait, they needed a field goal at the gun to win? Like, that speaks to, A, this was the worst game I'd seen their defense play. I think their defense will be better. They allowed Stafford to basically have free reign during the game. And B, once again, their wide receivers were MIA. Like, you go down the butt, you say, oh, Dak had 255 yards. Well, Zeke had 88 of them. A tight end had 39. So you can go down and see. It's still, they're having to manufacture their passing attack. But Zeke now, I mean, he went into the game leading the league in rushing. He now is on pace for about 1,700 yards rushing. That is what they are going to have in order to be competitive, until they get more of a consistent effort in the passing game. And I don't think that's coming this year. But I do want to give Dak credit, because Dak was coming off the worst stretch of football in his career. Oh, and yeah, he played a clean game. He played a good game. He broke that awful 5 straight games with under 200 yards passing streak he was on. So Credit to Dak Prescott for playing well. And you could see the burden, his celebration at the end was he was excited, but also I felt relieved that they got this win when he came on the field pumped up as he did.
All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this game coming up. But on the other side, how much trouble are the Steelers in after losing to the Baltimore Ravens last night? Next on First Things First. We will get to the Steelers' struggles in a second, but first, Davion Davis of Sam Houston State with one of the most acrobatic one-handed grabs you will see.
Oh,
no, that's nice. I was like, what is he throwing this? The DB's in better position.
Oh, my.
He could only catch this one with one hand. I don't prescribe to the one-hand theory, young people, but no one's listening.
Penn State, Ohio State, great game, great catch by Penn State's Juwan Johnson. Just incredible.
That's the best catch I've ever seen in long sleeves. In those long, they're almost loose-fitting sleeves. That's the best one of those I've seen, see? What? What?
I don't know. But that's a great catch. You know what? That's the best catch I've seen with a guy that's got an arm. This dude with a sleeve.
With long sleeves.
That was a great catch.
You don't usually see him like that.
Now, he dropped like 3 or 4 other ones.
Boise State's John Hightower makes a one-handed catch. Only needed one shoe to do it.
Oh, that's what flew off the screen was his shoe. I thought it was the ball bouncing at first glance. Because you see it right there. Oh, that's great. That's great.
That catch, that one's better than those first two. Holding the defender with one arm, catching it with the other.
All right, on to the NFL. Tyrell Williams of the Chargers extends over the defense to make the catch.
Puts himself in a precarious position. Hell of a play, man.
Phillip Rivers throws it at the back of his head. Remember we were talking about that last week? When the DB and the receiver are running together, man, don't throw it over his head. Throw it right at the back of his head.
All right, finally, Jarvis Landry with the nice toe tap to get the touchdown.
What I like about this was they had a great play fake, but he comes off the ball and acts as if he's not going to do anything. He logs the DB to sleep, then he makes a little stick nod and sticks it in the back. The toe tap, professional.
I feel like he got 3 feet down.
At least.
That's a great play by Jarvis. Jarvis had some drops.
Now, this is a hard fall when you fall in that dirt now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I hate playing on those fields.
All right, moving on to Sunday Night Football. It was billed as a grudge match, the rivalry of all rivalries, Steelers and Ravens. And what we got wasn't exactly that. Joe Flacco led the way for Baltimore, throwing for 363 yards and 2 touchdowns. A little competition will do that to you. Big Ben struggled, throwing a pick and a touchdown. Turns out the Steelers do, in fact, miss Le'Veon Bell. Ravens win 26-14. Roethlisberger didn't sugarcoat his performance after the game.
I don't think I'm on the same page as anybody right now because I'm not playing well enough. I need to play better. Today was just a bad day at the office. We've all had them. I had one today, and I promise I'll be back to play better.
All right, Nick, how can you pinpoint what went wrong for Roethlisberger in the Steelers offense?
Well, they got lucky. This game was about to be a blowout. They forced that fumble on the goal line. The offense then all of a sudden gets in sync, and they're 14-14 at the half. And at that point, I thought, okay, you dodged a bullet. You've slowed the Ravens. Your offense is clicking. And then in the second half, the Steelers' offense went to sleep. 47 yards in the second half of a huge game. No running attack whatsoever. And really, they haven't had much of a rushing attack since that week one performance where they ended up tying Cleveland. And Big Ben wasn't sharp. It is, we talked last week how if the Patriots were to lose, it would be panic time in New England. Oh, it's panic time in Pittsburgh. This team, they cannot defend the deep ball. The Ravens, they were lucky the Ravens only scored 26 because they were 1 of 5 in the red zone. They were holding them to field goals late. And Tucker's just automatic. He's unbelievable. But the Steelers right now, what do they do great? In this game, it should have been the aerial attack. They couldn't get on the same page as Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, after the game, says, can't throw it to myself. Like, so there's that ain't great. L. Bell's not there. The defense is having troubles, and they don't lose these games. Big Ben's 21-3 at home in primetime games in his career. Like, big games at Heinz Field, they don't lose. This is everything went wrong in the second half for Pittsburgh, and I don't have a lot of answers for them right now. Right now, they look to me to be the most disappointing team in football.
The Pittsburgh Steelers right now, they don't have any physicality. They don't run the ball well, and they don't play good defense. They haven't played good defense for a while. Now, people will make the excuse they lost one of their best players defensively, Ryan Shazier, in last year. But they had the whole offseason to build, try to replace him. They haven't been able to do that. They have no identity. We talked about Dallas. What are they going to do offensively? No identity. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers, when they get off the bus, who are they as a team? They're a collection of some superstars offensively, that being Ben and A.B. But besides that, like, who are they? Like, we didn't expect Connor to rush for 1,200, 1,300 yards, even after that first game. But it's a classic example of, oh, the next guy up.
Yep.
Well, the next guy's not better than the guy who's not here. So this Pittsburgh Steelers team, this whole offseason, to me, has just been about who Pittsburgh's been the last couple years. A team that doesn't have an identity, a team that has inner team turmoil, and now with L. Bell telling the offensive lineman, hey, guys, I'm going to be there week number one. And now we're going to week number five. So I believe it's a bigger deal him not being there now because he actually told his players that he would be there. If I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would try to trade him. I would try to move off of him as soon as possible to try to give this team, after a month of football, a lift.
They are indeed trying to trade him, but it's a tough situation for teams since they can't sign him this season, so it would be a very short rental. But how much of what happened yesterday would you put on Le'Veon Bell not being there? How much of the last couple games would you put on Le'Veon Bell not being there?
I think they had opportunities yesterday after halftime to win the game. I think they should have been able to win the game even without Le'Veon Bell. But you can't look at a game where they rush the ball 11 times and their long is 4 yards and they have 19 total yards rushing and not acknowledge Well, if you had one of the best running backs in football, it could have gone differently. A game where they're 2 of 12 on third down. They don't convert a third down in the second half. They don't get past midfield in the second half. Like, and say, what would Le'Veon Bell have been? And I fully agree with this. I understand that as a team, you have to have the mentality when a guy gets injured, it is next man up, that we're going to be okay. But that doesn't mean as commentators we have to buy into it. Like, we're not playing next week. And we can look at it and say there's a reason that there will be multiple teams fighting to pay Le'Veon Bell $12 to $15 million a year next year. And James Conner is right now exactly what a guy at his point in his career, drafted where he was, is supposed to be, a below-league average running back. Like, that's what they went from, one of the three best in the league to a guy who's slightly below league average. You don't magically make up that yardage. You don't magically make up that offense.
Is it possible that the Steelers will look at what happened yesterday and say, hey, guys, did we get this wrong? Maybe this is the guy that maybe we should rethink our strategy here with Le'Veon Bell.
No, they're not going to give him a long-term contract. I don't care how many games they lose. They can not win a game the rest of the year. They are not going. You cannot put those types of dollars and those types of guarantees into a running back who has the number of carries he's already had on him. Nick mentioned there's some other team, but he doesn't have history with the other team. He hadn't been suspended a couple times with another team. So, yeah, someone's going to take that chance. I don't believe the market's as strong as people would like to indicate. So I believe there's still going to be trouble in trying to move this player for a second-round pick and a talented starter potentially. I don't believe that type of deal is going to be out there for the Steelers.
And I understand that there's going to be a lot of focus and discussion about Le'Veon Bell and the running back situation today, especially because of their rushing performance. Yeah. But one thing that's been consistent throughout the year is the back end of that Steelers defense. You can't make Joe Flacco look like it's the playoff run where they went to the Super Bowl. He and John Brown all of a sudden look like one of the best deep ball combos in football. The Steelers were lucky the Ravens only scored 26 points. It felt like the Ravens left points on the board multiple times by coming up short in the red zone. The defense right now is the biggest issue on the team because the offense, they still have Big Ben. But a game like yesterday where Big Ben has his worst game since week one, not a lot of paths to victory for them.
Steelers now 1-2-1 after losing to the Baltimore Ravens yesterday. Time now for Put a Grade On, and presented by CarMax. The Baker Mayfield experience was an up and down one yesterday. Threw for nearly 300 yards and two touchdowns. He also turned the ball over four times. Chris, put a grade on Baker's performance.
I'm going to give him a C. I would have flunked him, but he threw the ball too well. You can tell he's a star in this league. Being young in this league and lack of experience, especially with a team that hadn't won a lot. So it's different than taking over some different teams. This whole roster hadn't won a lot, and you could see that in the young quarterback yesterday.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a B. And if you didn't watch the game, you just look at the box score, you're like, how? With those four turnovers, two of them interceptions. Man, he threw the ball really well. One of the picks was tipped, and that ended up getting returned. He's got to be better with ball security. I understand that. But they scored 42 points. He was throwing dimes, and he had some bad drops. And Njoku dropped a bad one. Jarvis dropped a bad one. The Browns' offense is not why they didn't win yesterday. It was their defense and some officiating miscues. I thought Baker, if you're a Browns fan, you would have liked to win, but you got to be encouraged by Baker once again looking really good. I give him a B.
And we'll talk more about that game again in a little bit. But coming up, have the Patriots fixed all of their problems on offense? That's next on First Things First. It is one of the wildest endings to a regular season we've ever seen. It's going to take another day of action to separate the division champs from the wild cards. Then the NLDS begins Thursday on FS1. It's getting good.
Two game 163s.
I mean.
And then the wild card game.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Sticking with baseball, now it is time for us to go viral. Giancarlo Stanton hit his 38th home run at Fenway over the weekend, and the Boston fan did not appreciate it. Throws the ball back from the Green Monster, guess what? Actually hits Stanton. And Stanton with the nod. Kudos to you, my friend. Look at this arm.
Henry Rowengardner got a contract off this years ago. The Chicago Cubs.
This is dangerous, man. They shouldn't allow people to throw the ball back in the field of play. It'd be no different than a guy throwing the ball up into the stands.
Okay.
Leave it for CeCe.
Let me ask you this. Since they do allow it, and it is part of it, he shouldn't be in extra trouble because his happened to hit Stanton. Like, they allow that. They allow the if the opposing team hits a home run, you're allowed to throw it back in the field of play. You might say it's foolish.
Okay.
But since they allow it.
They got a lot of stupid rules in baseball.
Okay.
Just another.
Okay.
But it hit the it hit the one guy who's wearing a helmet walking around. It could have hit
and
one
hit
of the guys
the only
who
opposing
didn't have a
team player. I mean, it's right. The Red Sox fan. Hit the only Yankee out there.
It only needs to happen one time.
I was just going
to
say, it happens one time and it's
put an eye out. You'll put an eye out.
Okay. I'm
it's
about
all
safety.
Fun and games.
I'm about safety.
Yeah, wear your goggles, wear your helmet, man.
All right, stories.
Safe work environments.
Here we go. Let's start your morning right. Saints improved to 3-1 with a win over the New York Giants. Alvin Kamara had three touchdowns, including a 49-yard run to seal it at the end. Giants fall to 1-3, which Odell Beckham referred to as frustrating. All right, CeCe, what did you make of Kamara's performance yesterday?
They used him the right way. I mean, they were concerned about the four-game usage. They're getting Ingram back this week, and Sean Payton talking to him last week, they were concerned with the number of carries. So starting off this game, didn't utilize him like they did the first three games. But as the game went on, him running the ball between the tackles is unexpected. The undersized right. running back, a scat back, and how they're utilizing him, the way they design their plays is brilliant for them. That's why they've been so successful.
Their ability in the second half to use him the way they would use Mark Ingram was spectacular.
They have a great offensive line, too. People don't talk about it, but that offensive line really helps Drew Brees.
19 for 134 and three touchdowns on the ground. That offense right now looks as good as any offense in football, and they're getting Mark Ingram back.
All right, on to the Packers and Bills. Packers and their throwbacks. Shutout, Buffalo, 22-0, behind nearly 300 yards passing from Aaron Rodgers. Josh Allen struggled in his third start, throwing for 151 yards and two picks. Nick, let's start with Aaron Rodgers. How do you think he looked?
Rodgers looked good. He made a few of those patented Rodgers throws where he's running and then just flicks the ball, it looks like, and it goes 30 yards in the air perfectly. This, to me, though, I couldn't watch this game and not think about the last week's game against Minnesota. Like, this Bills team is exactly who we thought they were. They showed it again yesterday. I mean, Aaron Rodgers said after the game he was disappointed in the offense. Then the game they won 22-0.
Yeah, he should have been. He's starting to practice a little bit more. You could see that participating in Thursday. So now you start to see his mobility come back. Without a setback, we'll see him just start to get a little healthier. You could see it in yesterday's game against Buffalo.
All right, moving on to the Falcons and Bengals. How about Cincinnati now sitting atop the AFC North with a 37-36 win? Andy Dalton threw for 337 yards and three touchdowns. It spoiled Matt Ryan's 400-yard, three-touchdown game. See, how tough of a loss was this for the Atlanta Falcons?
The Falcons can't stop anyone. I mean, their offense is great. They're moving the ball around. Julio had another big day. Ridley has another score and everything, but they can't stop anybody. They got wholesale substitutions, linebackers out, nickelbacks out, safeties out. Like, this is going to be a week-after-week trend. How many points does Atlanta's defense give up?
And the Falcons are sitting at 1-3, and they're two plays and one coin toss away from being 4-0. Like, they got to be sick to their stomachs. Now, you're right that the defense, it's not like the knight in shining armor is coming. They have lost two safeties, the middle linebacker. But Matt Ryan's having a year almost equivalent to his MVP year, and the team just can't get stops at the end. Got to be incredibly frustrating for Falcons fans right now.
Finally now, Titans won a wild one in overtime over the Eagles. Penalties extended the drive for the Tennessee offense twice before Marcus Mariota found Corey Davis in the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. All right, CeCe, what'd you make of the Titans win?
Titans played well. They're a very physical football team. Mike Vrabel in his first year. They're 3-1, surprisingly. Only game they lost was that marathon game, the first one, where there was two delays, lightning, of course, the Chris Carter game to start the season against the Dolphins. But very physical team. Another team that has a lot of injuries. They've been battling their quarterback. But, man, it was a gutty performance by Marcus Mariota yesterday. I mean, him being able to make throws late in the game didn't look great throughout the game. But Philadelphia's secondary, they were bad. I mean, they were awful. Penalties in critical situation. They gave up a fourth down and 15 where they allowed the guy just to run a deep out. Off coverage. The guy's off of him. The guy just kept going back. What do you think he's going to do? He's going to stop around the sticks. The under coverage didn't run to it. I mean, bad defensive football.
How does that 4th and 15 happen, C? Because it looked like they were in the defensive alignment. They had four defensive backs lined up.
They got a new guy playing in the nickel spot. All he's got to do is run under the number one. There's only one receiver to his side of the field. He's outside of him. All he's got to do is back out. He sees he's running the out run right underneath it. Just their secondary, their nickel and their dime are really struggling.
This Philadelphia, listen, credit to the Titans. They made the playoffs last year. They won a playoff game last year, and they were a forgotten team heading into this year. I think they got better at coach. Vrabel made some gutsy, correct calls in the overtime on fourth
correct,
down.
Correct, because they were.
Yes.
Absolutely.
If they did
everybody's
work,
got guts when they work.
When they work. When they don't, you're just the Colts and you're Frank Reich. But
yeah, I've been on the sideline telling the coach, let's go for it. Let's go, coach. And it's like, no, we shouldn't have went for that one. But
okay,
go ahead.
Well, it's fine if you want to judge them in hindsight. The way I like to judge
them
is
the way we always judge things, Nick.
Okay, well, that's not the way I judge the fourth down calls. We'll see that when we talk about the Colts game. But there are some calls that are just mathematically correct or incorrect. He went with the math every time. The 4th and 15, there was no math there. It was they were down 3 points in overtime. If you have no choice but to go for it. But he has done a good job. And credit to the Titans, who are 3-1 despite having bad quarterback play throughout the season, basically. I mean, they've had a quarterback injury. But the Philadelphia thing, to me, C, is the bigger part of this story, which is last week they barely hold on to a win after they let Andrew Luck drive down the field and then they get a stop in the red zone. We saw them this week. They're up 17-3 in this game. You can't be up 17-3 and let this Titans offense come back. And they had multiple chances to get off the field with the win in overtime. They had to convert 3 fourth downs in overtime for the Titans to win that game. I mean, if you're Philadelphia, I think you are very concerned about where your pass defense is.
Philly fans were up in arms about just that. How is it that you come out and play so poorly defensively when, for the most part, for so long, that's been sort of their bread and butter all last year leading to this one? Is that coaching? Is that personnel? What is that?
Their secondary played above their ability last season. Yep. They had a good vibe. They made a lot of plays. And their pass rush was ferocious. They had a rotation of 7 guys. That Fletcher Cox is probably the only guy on the defense, him and Malcolm Jenkins, that are playing good football. Collectively, they just don't have enough people. I don't see the consistent rush from the other people outside of Fletcher Cox. So, also, remember how – I know Coach Mangini talked about this, too. Remember how they talked about how much fun it is in Philadelphia?
Uh-huh.
How much fun is it now?
It's true.
How much fun is it today? All right, since this whole offseason was all, man, it's so much fun. We have so much more fun than New England. Okay, let's get used to winning, all right? You hadn't won any championships, and now you're telling teams, hey, you know, it's got to be about fun. No, it's got to be about winning, and they don't have enough good football players playing well.
All right, speaking of New England, Patriots played a rare Week 4 must-win game yesterday, the always popular Week 4 must-win. Trying to beat the undefeated Miami Dolphins, didn't have to try that hard. Patriots handed Miami a 38-7 beatdown, snapping their 2-game skid, showing consistency on both sides of the ball for the first time all season. Tom Brady had 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. The only blemish, Rob Gronkowski had to leave with an ankle injury. He did not return. Here is Tom Brady after the game.
We haven't played well the last 2 weeks, and you know, we talked a lot about the things we need to do better, and we need to carry them over from week to week. So this game's great, but, you know, you got to turn the page once you learn from it, and, you know, you get focused on the next game, and you build on the things you didn't do well. You understand what they did well, and some other teams are going to see that too. So it's just a big – it's a long process. It's a long season. We've only played 4 out of the 16, and hopefully we're a lot better in October than we were in September, and we're going to need it because we face some good competition. And, you know, this was one that we really talked about and tried to get on track and got off to a fast start and played from ahead, which is, you know, most teams that play from ahead end up winning.
All right, so the Patriots solved all their problems. Let's move on to the next. No, but it certainly seemed that way from what we were reading, from what we felt, from Tom Brady's Instagram post afterwards. Spirits were much higher. Are the Patriots' problems maybe not a thing of the past, but a little less worrisome to you now after this convincing
win? No, the Patriots still got big problems. They got more problems going into the game, especially if Rob Gronkowski's hurt. The wide receiver, they ain't got no wide receivers. I mean, you think you're going to get Cordell Patterson, you're going to get them to drop coverage for the 55-yard? And if Gronk's not there, who's going to get open for you? So, no, let's not blow this out of proportion. They beat the AFC East, and they beat them all at home. So We were expecting them to be able to win the game. Miami didn't play the type of football game that they wanted to. But listen to the defensive coordinator. He said going into the game of Miami, he said, I don't know what New England's going to do, but I'm going to guess they're going to run the ball 30 times. And that's exactly what they did. We'll talk about all the other optics and everything, but the biggest difference was their ability to run the ball and run it with Sony Michel. He was the big addition that they've added to their team. And for them to be a good football team, they're going to have to get the ball in his hands. James White is not a runner. Barner, who they signed, Kenyon Barner, he's not a runner. They only got one runner, and that's Sony Michel. He had a knee injury in training camp that held him back. It's a knee that he's had problems with in the past, so it's something we have to monitor. But his ability to be able to run the football, they made that. That's what made this game the type of game that it was. Miami. In week number three, when they got to 3-0, they lost two of their interior defenders. New England knew that, so that's where they attacked them. This game plan was about what we need to do, what you're missing in defensive, and I'm going to try to exploit that, and that's what they did.
One of those defenders, famously, defensive lineman, was lost trying to avoid the roughing the passer penalty. You remember watching that highlight of him blowing his ACL. You hit on it. The first thing I've written down here, ate them alive on the ground. I mean, 40 rushes for 175 yards. That was, they went into this game. I'm very impressed by what Sony Michel was able to do because he only had 24 rushes the first 2 weeks of the season. He had 25 yesterday. You finally saw that first round pick paying dividends somewhat for New England. But I take a slightly different slant than C as far as where their problems were and where they are now. Because they got this win, and now they do have Edelman coming back. And now, even though his impact was minimal, you saw that Josh Gordon at least knew enough about the playbook to where they felt comfortable activating him. He had two targets.
He ran the easiest route. Run a slant. One guy's run the slant. The other guy's going in the flat. The other things, running plays. When he was in the game, running plays because they're easy. Just block the guy over you. So thinking he's going to make another big jump, I would just reserve a little bit, even seeing him out there. I could see they doctored up the game plan just to have him on the field.
But fair enough. But my point is the fact that he was able to be active. That is the first step, obviously, to him ever making an impact with the team.
I mean, but we still don't know who he is, though.
Agreed.
We don't know what kind of receiver he is.
I agree with you. But it's him being active is a step in the direction towards him contributing more so than if he was inactive like he was in week three. But Edelman coming back, to me, is an enormous part of this. And
especially if Gronk isn't 100% or active at all.
And the Gronk injury, the Patriots obviously are going to be as cagey about this as the league allows them to be for as long as they can. So we probably won't get any information on that for at least a couple days. But the other side of the ball, we spent a good portion of last week talking about how much speed the Dolphins have. And the Pats made Ryan Tannehill look like he's looked every game he's played in that building. They made Ryan Tannehill look like the quarterback that prior to this streak that was ended the 2016 season and started this season, had a lot of Dolphins fans hoping to move on from Ryan Tannehill. The Pats defense, I mean, totally eliminated any of the playmakers from the Dolphins offense. To me, they had the most complete win of any team in the league yesterday on both sides of the ball in a game that was a critical game for them. So go ahead.
Week number three, the word was desperation. And that's what was in Foxborough yesterday.
Yes.
They know they can't lose that game. Miami understands the game. All right, the game planning with the running game that, and Miami just could never get enough first downs. 1, 2, 3 first downs, get into the opposition's territory to be able to take advantage of that speed. So New England, right from the beginning, played a very, very good football game.
And the third downs were the biggest difference. The Pats were 10 of 15 on third downs.
Yep.
And if you watched it, it wasn't a lot of third and ones. It was third and 6. It was third and 7. It was third and 5. And they were picking them up consistently. And the few times they didn't pick them up, there seemed to be a holding penalty or an illegal contact penalty that gave them a new set of downs.
In this game, if you watch Tom Brady, and the reason why I don't say they're not out of the woods, watch how many times Tom Brady threw the ball away or threw the ball in the area where there was no one there. All right? The offensive line couldn't hold up. He was trying to make good decisions and trying to – he at least 5 times threw the ball where there was going to be no one there. And the reason why – because no one was getting separation on the outside.
When you look at these two teams, Dolphins had played well. Yesterday was a terrible game. Patriots had not played that well. Yesterday was a great game for them. Were these both outlier games, or are we starting to see more of who these teams' identities actually are?
We have to be careful, all right? We know the Patriots coming into the season are going to use the first 4 weeks I believe Miami's a much improved team. I believe they are a legitimate contender in the AFC East for the first time since the Jets, when the Jets had Sanchez and Ryan coaching them. So Miami's a better football team. You can't draw too many conclusions from one game.
Done. Word of God. Coming up, should Andrew Luck point the finger at his coach for yesterday's loss? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins the show. Hey, coach.
How are you?
Great day of football yesterday. Let's talk about one of those games. Okay. The one in Indy, the one where the Colts played the Texans, the one where Andrew Luck tied the game with less than a minute to go. Fast forward to overtime, 4th and 4 from their own 43, less than 30 seconds left. Indy doesn't convert. Frank Reich opts to go for it. The decision did not pay off. Texans kick the game-winning field goal 3 plays later for their first win of the season. Went through that pretty fast, but Colts head coach Frank Reich explained his decision after the game.
We're not playing to tie. I mean, we're going for that 10 times out of 10. I mean, that's just the way it's got to roll.
We discussed earlier, coach, whether we're analyzing these games in hindsight or moving forward, but what did you make of his decision there?
I didn't like the decision at the time, and I understand the idea of being aggressive and not playing for a tie, but when you've gone that far into the game and you put your team in a position to at least come out of it with a tie and you make that decision where they made it, you know that if you don't get it, odds are that the other team is going to be able to convert and the other team's going to win the game. And the play call itself seemed pretty uninspired. They came out initially, there was a timeout, and then they run hitches at the sticks against press coverage. It didn't feel like that was a decision that he said was his
only regret, that he called a timeout, that they should have just moved forward with it as if.
Yeah, I thought the initial formation, at least you had some potential against man-to-man defense to get some type of rubber outs. That what they came out with the second time was a very standard sticks-type play against press man-to-man coverage. Didn't seem high percentage, and the whole situation felt more reactionary than the thought process of, no matter what happens here, we're going to go for this. And saying we're not going to play for a tie, would they have done the same thing if it was 4th and 6? What if it was 4th and 8? What if it was 4th and 10? Were they going for it on 4th down no matter what? And did he tell the play caller on 3rd down, hey, whatever happens here, this is 4 down territory? Because that affects things as well. And the quarterback, he needs to know, I've got 2 downs here as opposed to 1 down. And none of that felt like it was happening as it unfolded.
I don't think that it was the right call to go for it. But there were way worse coaching calls all throughout the day in the NFL. Calls that are no-brainers. Calls like to call a timeout at the end of the half. The Giants and Steelers blew that. The Texans in this game themselves, before overtime and during overtime, calls that aren't a questionable decision. And the way this was covered during the game, as if Frank Reich was coaching malpractice, I think is totally unfair. I understand why he would do it. He's feeling, if I punt the ball here, we have 0% chance to win. If I go for it, now they still have about another 15 yards to gain. They didn't have timeouts. That's why I didn't love the decision, was even if they pick it up, you still might end up with a tie. But the other side of it is, if we don't get it, the Texans are going to have to execute. They're going to have to get at least 10 yards in about 20 seconds in order for them to have a field goal, because they were not in Kaim Fairbairn's field goal range from that moment. So I understand why he did it. I don't think it was the right call, but I don't think it was an egregious call the way I felt it was discussed during the game and the commentary after the game. It was treated as if it was a no-brainer that he made the wrong decision. And if he's looking at the division and saying, man, a tie is as good as a loss if we're trying to win this division, if we're trying to catch Jacksonville or catch Tennessee. Like that half game is not going to help us. It's having a half game more in a loss column is not going to hurt us as much as having a half game more in the win column would help us.
Coach Mangini, I know this is going to shock you. I totally agree with you. And the reason why, because I didn't think the team knew. And Brian Billick used to always tell me something. Chris, if you want to be able to suggest plays to me in critical situations, I need you to think like me. I need you to memorize all of our critical throws, all of our 3rd down, all of our red zone. And when you can do that, then I'll let you have more input. I know you have a great football mind, and I respect it and everything, but if you want to have better communications on Sunday, I didn't think that the third down call was synced up with we're going for it on fourth down. And I don't have my number one wide receiver. I'm going to tell you what they ran. Now, they ran rocket right or double right, all stops. All right? When you have a fourth or third in 4-6, it's all stop. It's a customary route around the NFL. Everyone runs it. All right? Critical situation. But you don't have no wide receiver that's going to be able to get in and out of that collision because he's only right 2 yards beyond the chuck zone. So you know they're going to play man. No one is going to play zone on fourth down. No, they're going to play man-to-man. So the stop route against man-to-man, it is not unless you have a number one guy or a big physical guy or a big tight end. They didn't have those. T.Y. Hilton is on the bench with a bad hamstring. So that's the reason. Not because you don't like it. Not because they didn't get it. Number one, it wasn't synced up with the team. And that defense, it's irresponsible to them to make them have to go out there and make one more stop. All right. You didn't get the first down on three. Punt it down. All right. Because the defense gets a tie. And when you go back into the office and you didn't lose in that half a game, it's a big difference the next week. So, Frank Wright, I believe it was a bad call. All right. Because sometimes a tie is necessary. And in that game yesterday, a tie was necessary if they didn't pick it up.
Yeah, and a couple things here. We don't know what a tie is going to mean to this division
sure.
at this point. We've got a long way to go, and I've heard the comparison between, okay, he was in Philadelphia and they were aggressive in the Philly special. That wasn't the Philly special. That was literally a play that says, my guy is better than your guy, and that matchup, that wasn't the case.
And Philadelphia is going to be able to bring that rush. Their defense was playing better. So a lot of time when you make an aggressive call, it's because – Bill Belichick, I'm afraid of Peyton Manning. Or sure. I got a great freaking defense.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And to evaluate the call in the context of other mistakes that other people made, I don't think that's the way to look at a call either. I don't think we say, well, other people made mistakes the other day. And look, if he felt good about that call, if that was a gotta-have-it play that they practiced, if Andrew Luck knew what they were going to do, if they liked the matchup, if they were doing all those things, then I say, okay, go ahead and take that chance. I totally get it, and I'm never going to criticize someone for doing that because that's their thought process,
yes.
and they believed in it. But it didn't feel like they had gone into that situation saying, this is what we're going to do if we get to fourth down. And in critical moments, you need to be definitive and strong, and the guys need to know what they're doing.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And if we want to pick apart justifiably, I think it's critical to know if you're going to go for it on fourth, that affects your third down call. That's what you're talking about, being synced up with the play calling. If we want to talk about their third down play call, the actual play they ran on fourth down, if they were doing the mental math of, even if we pick this up, how likely is it we get in field goal range? All of those things are totally fair critiques that I think are legitimate. It's why I said I don't think I would have gone for it. But the idea that in that setting, that fourth and four with 27 seconds left on your own 43-yard line in a tied overtime situation, that it's a must punt, that I reject flatly. Now, because T.Y. Hilton's out, because of other extenuating circumstances, what they ran on third down, I understand why there's criticism. But there is a logical case to be made in that spot that you go for it because even if you don't get it, you still, all you have to do is make one stop defensively and the game, and it's a tie either way. So now you can say they don't have the defensive personnel. There's a lot of reasons to criticize it. And the reason I brought up the other situations was we're not going to lead a segment talking about some other coaching decisions that were not questionable. They were no-brainers, and the Jets punted down 12 with 4 minutes left in the game. Like, that's a no-brainer. You can't do that, and they did it. So there were a lot. Frank Reich's getting killed today and will be killed today, and I don't know if that part of it's fair.
And also, it's important to note that a lot of the players that were interviewed afterwards said, we love the fact that he had such faith in the offense and he was being aggressive, and we love that.
They have to do that.
Okay.
They have to do that. You can't throw the coach. Even if the coach makes the wrong decision, you all have to be in sync. That's a good organization. That means they're buttoned up in comments. Even the stuff that you're not happy with, you're still going to say, I'm gonna help my guys. This is also Frank Wright. It's his first job.
Right.
So the players did a good job of that after the game.
I got to ask you about Andrew Luck real quick. Where are we now 4 games in with Luck after what you saw yesterday? Is he on the same trajectory we thought he'd be on when this season started?
Well, we didn't really know what trajectory he would be on. He's obviously playing at a much better level each week, and we're going to have to give him some time, not only with the injury, but also with the fact that this is a new offense, and that's going to take a while for him to get in total sync with what they're trying to achieve, how they're trying to achieve it. His numbers are a little bit down from the previous year, but it's trending upward. It's definitely trending upward. And I'm a big Andrew Luck fan, so I might be a little bit biased here, but I do see more and more positive things.
Yeah, he can quarterback my team.
He can quarterback my team too. and then the main thing is the injury doesn't seem to be on his mind anymore. And that's what I was looking for in the early part. How much is he really factoring that in? And it doesn't seem to be a factor at all.
When Andrew Luck was last playing with the Colts, they were a different offense. T.Y. Hilton, Moncrief, Gore, Philip Dorsett, and a tight end. Now, they don't have a whole bunch of talent. So when you start evaluating Andrew Luck, evaluate 400 yards, 40 completions to 9 different receivers.
Yep.
All right? Dude can play for me.
We talked about it, a step backwards in his road to recovery. I thought yesterday was an enormous or a couple steps forward. He had 450 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no picks, and his team lost. That's the only second time that's happened since the merger. Like, he played well enough to win. They had no running game. There were 17 of 41 on the ground. They lost T.Y. Hilton, as you mentioned. Luck played. There are a lot of reasons the Colts lost that game. Andrew Luck's nowhere near on that list. He looked excellent. And, I mean, they had him throw the ball 62 times. Like, it's a big ask, and he was great, I thought.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming up on the other side is the key to success for the Cowboys. Less Dak and more Zeke. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini. Cowboys got some mojo back yesterday playing the Lions. And Ezekiel Elliott, the story in this one, carried the ball 25 times, gained 240 total yards, scoring once. Most importantly, had a 34-yard catch to set up this. The game-winning field goal. Dak was happy. Cowboys win it 26-24. Dak threw for 255 yards, 2 touchdowns, as the Cowboys now sit at 2-2. Here's Ezekiel Elliott discussing that pivotal catch after the game.
Honestly, I've been trying to get that play for a while. We ran it a couple of times in practice and it hit, but once I saw we got in a 2-minute offense and they were playing man-to-man, they had a linebacker lined up on me in the slot, I just knew I was telling the guys on sideline, give me the inside fade.
And you've got Zeke on a linebacker. We're going to take that matchup any day of the week. Doesn't matter who the linebacker is.
Now that catch over his shoulder, when it all counted, should be one we all remember. And I'm glad I got to see it. But I've never seen him play any better than he played today.
2-2 is much better than 1-3, and it's it was great for us just to come out here, get things going offensively, and just be able to go down there and win that game on that last drive. It's big for everybody's confidence and just moving forward and momentum that we can take from this game and carry on.
Coach, did the Cowboys finally realize what it seemed like we all realized earlier, that the key to success is going to be just running the ball and getting Zeke more carries than not?
Yeah, you look at some of their early games and they were in a significant amount of empty, where now Zeke really isn't a threat at all and they don't have to worry about the running game. You're thinking, what's the benefit of doing this? And by putting him in the backfield, in committing to running the ball the way that they did, everybody's going to have to load up the box. And it's not like this is some big secret that you have to load up the box against Zeke, but for them to commit to it was a step in the right direction. And then the zone runs or the run pass options, I think those are important too to keep incorporating and try to take advantage of not only him as a threat as a runner, but also Dak as a threat as a runner too, and try to open up some things, because they've got to generate ways to get the outside guys open. And the best way to do that is to get everybody to commit to the coverage on the interior part, the running game between Zeke and Dak.
During the break, Coach, we were talking about your son's football teams and your junior high, and they played a team that had one guy that was clearly bigger and better than everybody, and that team just kept giving him the ball. Like, this is a tale as old as sports. Give your best player the ball as often as possible until the other team can stop it, and then go to your counterpunch. Don't go to your counterpunch ahead of time. And the Cowboys had been counterpunching instead of punching weeks 1 through 3. Zeke's carries 17, 15, 16. That was egregious coaching to go along with their quarterback struggling as much as he'd struggled as a pro. Yesterday, they give the ball to Zeke 25 times on the ground, and not shockingly, Dak has his best day through the air that we've seen from him in, what, 2 months worth of football. This is the Cowboys' formula to success. Now, you can make the argument that it should be concerning that Zeke had the best game statistically of his career and they needed a field goal at the gun to win it, but the Cowboys at this point will take a win by any means necessary, and having Zeke be your bell cow is obviously what they need to do. It's going into the year. The reason we thought he could approach 2,000 yards was partially, CC, because he's special, but partially because we thought they were going to have no other choice but to run him close to 400 times
this year. They don't have any
other
choice, and they didn't run him.
Right, the first 3 weeks. But yesterday, 150 on the ground, almost 90 in the air. I mean, that's a great game, and that's why the Cowboys won.
He had a great game, but I still think Dallas has two problems. One being they're not going to believe in identity of what happened last night. Like, are they going to grow that offense? Because with him being successful in the passing game, they had the big screen earlier, then you had to fade from the slot. How else do they grow his game passing-wise? We know they got to run the ball, but where else? Is Scott Linehan going to come up with five or six different formations where you can throw the ball to Zeke? I don't think so. I mean, the same Cowboys, I believe next week we'll go back. Zeke will have 15 to 18 rushes, a couple throws out of the backfield, because this is how they've played. And they're going to struggle to be able to win games. Zeke is as good as he was in the passing game. Four times targeted, four catches, 88 yards. He's their leading receiver.
Yeah.
Who else you going to beat on a given day where he's your leading receiver? Now, I believe in getting him the football. He needs 28 touches a game. But you still have a problem from a lack of wide receiver in this win. If we're just looking at it honestly, did Dallas figure something out? To me, no. Because even with his best game ever, they struggled and still should have lost this game.
Just real quick, let me ask you this, C, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Coach. From a passing perspective, I did think schematically they were taking more shots downfield, which is what we talked about last week, that they have to take, you said, eight in the game, two a quarter essentially, where you give yourself a chance for chunk plays. And they did that in this week's game more than they had done it in those 3 weeks. Now, it didn't change who's catching the ball on the other end of it, but I thought that gave them a better chance to move.
Conceptually,
the ball.
They changed just a little bit. But from a talent standpoint, it's still the same guys. They do not have a bunch of playmakers. I'm very disappointed in Hearns. His inability to get separation week in and week out just has not been there. Cole Beasley in the slot, like, he provided them just a little bit of a lift, but every week, like, Cole Beasley's going to be my number one guy. Like, so we're going to have problems.
One of the things that I do like about taking a shot is when you're loading up the box, when you are committed to the running game and people have to come up, then we saw it. We've seen it over time with great running backs. That does open up those opportunities to throw it down the field. But again, you need to be committed. If Chris, you were talking about two a quarter, you need to do that. You need to get the defense to think, okay, the safeties can't keep creeping up. Everybody can't keep creeping up, because you only need to hit one or two of those a game, and suddenly
right.
which they did. Which they did.
To Zeke.
And so then now defensively you think, okay, do I really want to commit to this down in and down out of loading up the box, of moving everybody up? Because then you get hit with those home run balls. It will be interesting to see what type of lessons they pull from this game. What do we see moving forward? Is this something they go back and they watch the tape and say it's an aberration? Or do they go back and say, okay, this is who we need to be moving forward?
We were all down on Dak last week. A lot of fans had a hard time with just the way Dak's been playing. Do you feel any better about what you saw yesterday?
You have to get... Wait, ahead. First of all, these guys play how they play. It ain't our fault. It's our job to critique how they're playing. So Dak, like, if you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you're not supposed to be a roller coaster ride. It's supposed to be some smooth sailing. Or even when you dip, your dips are not so low. So how they play... Listen, it's not up for us to be, hey, man, they have to play better. Dak's got to play better. You saw his enthusiasm at the end. Man, he needed this.
He
was feeling the pressure. So it's not the outside, Dak knows he's got to play better. Nick and I, our commentary is not going to change.
And, right? And see, if Dak was a roller coaster, the last 5 weeks, he was the most boring roller coaster ever because there weren't any dips. It was just long, flat at the bottom. It was five straight games under 200 yards passing. So how do I feel? What I think is this. Dak had his best game he's had this season and one of the best games he's had since Zeke's suspension last season. Now, 255 yards passing and 17 completions would not be many guys' best game in a month, but it was for Dak. And so that is the type of stat line you want to see from him.
Barely won.
Absolutely. But the defense needs, I anticipate the defense playing better typically. I think they got pressure on Stafford like 8% of his throws. He had a clean pocket the whole game, it felt like.
Yeah. DeMarcus
Lawrence was the only guy. I think he had three sacks, and I think those were almost the entirety of the pressures the Cowboys had the entire game. Point I'm making is less than 30 attempts, 220 to 260 yards passing. That's about what you should expect from a above average NFL quarterback. So all I've been saying is, can Dak be above average? Because we were talking about his stat line looked like Brock Osweiler's over his last 13 games. And that's a discussion you never want to be in. And it also, of course, helps when your best player has his best career day.
And they're going to have that discussion and figure out, is this our franchise quarterback? Is this the guy that we want to commit $100+ million to? Or is this a guy that needs 25 carries from our elite running back in order to be moderately effective? You need your quarterback, especially a guy like him who should be emerging each year. You need to get some sort of significant production, some sort of significant growth before you commit to him long term. Otherwise,
You need your quarterback to be a force multiplier.
Without a doubt. Or you also need to see growth. If he's not a force multiplier now, and maybe he's taking a step back, and sometimes young quarterbacks do that, you need to see some growth after they take that step back. And I don't know if we've seen very much of that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.